Tampa Bay Rowdies, who have made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
A chance by score!
Oh, that is a delicious goal for Tampa Bay.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is Reem Smalls coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight covering the Rowdies with our shadow boxing champion who has returned to us from Ecuador. Carlos is back, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, though, we are here to talk about some less happy news while we have Carlos. So I guess that's the only way that you can, I guess that's the best way to come back. The worst way to come back is something. So, Carlos, how are you doing?
I'm well, James. I'm well. I got to see a game back when I was in Ecuador of my favorite team in Ecuador in the Copa Libertadores, which was really nice. Got to see some family, see some friends. It was all great and dandy. Of course, got to watch the Rowdies home opener, which despite the result, it was lovely seeing the stadium in all its glory, seeing the fans in all of their, you know, bright green and gold. Just over 6,000 was the official attendance number. I don't think it was the 7,000 we were necessarily hoping for the home opener, but it's fine. I think 6,000, if we keep that number up for the rest of the year, is a solid average on the year. But always love to see a full stadium for the future. So, James, I'm well. Wish the result was a bit different. I never like to see this Loudon squad get the better of us. But like I've said in the past, this Loudon team looks pretty legit. Maybe this time I'm actually right. We'll see, though. We won't talk about that game yet. We'll get into it just a little bit. There's a big week ahead, James. Rowdies stuff going on. There's an Open Cup matchup against an in-state rival, a new in-state matchup, by the way. And then a not-so-new matchup this weekend against a foe we've come to know very, very, very well, who's very much flying in the Eastern Conference as well. It does not get much easier for your Tampa Bay Rowdies, James. But before we do any of that, about talking about this past week or before we talk about this upcoming week, tell me what's going on in your life, James. I love the USA four-star crest we are going on your end.
Yes, it is the U.S. Women's National Team crest for anyone who couldn't put that one together. But I guess maybe we could hope to live to a day when there are four crests or four stars over both crests. I don't know when the hell that'll be, but we'll keep our eyes open. We'll keep our
one
eyes
day.
Open.
One day.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I got to go to the game, and as much as it was not the result that anybody wanted, just like you said, it was very nice to see everybody back. The TIFOs were lovely. Both the Remembrance TIFOs and the TIFO for Al Lang Stadium itself, whoever worked on that, both of them, fantastic. The Remembrance from the team overall to Matt Cox and Brian McLaughlin were both very nice. So I would like to just say, anybody who was involved in both of those as well, thank you so much for doing really, really nice work for fans who were a huge part of Tampa Bay and the Rowdies community overall.
Great work.
Need to throw that out there and make everybody aware. If you haven't seen any of the TIFOs that were available, go on social media, check them out. Everything should be on RBLR Rowdies, at least, if not other places. So let's move on to the game itself. There was a lot to talk about this past week, Carlos. I don't know how much you missed while you were down in Ecuador, but there was more to it than just the game, even. We have got to get into the news from Friday. We have got to get into the game itself. Somehow we've got to do two previews. And I just want to throw out there before we get started that we have our ticket competition going on right now. If you bring a new fan, someone who has never been to a Rowdies game before, to a Rowdies game, if you take a picture with them, take a selfie, you tag RBLR Sports, RBLR Rowdies, one or the other, just let us know that you brought them there, and you will be entered into a competition to win free tickets to the Rowdies home game, I think, on the 16th of August, which is the original era game. That will take us back to the original era when the Rowdies were formed in 1975. It's obviously going to have a lot of memorabilia and going to have a lot of memory involved in it. So if you would like to take part in that for free, please take part in our ticket competition by bringing a fan, taking a selfie, and letting us know that you did so. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube, any major podcast platform, and follow us on all your social medias where you can tag us too. Carlos has one more thing to say.
Word on the street, and I don't know if I'm giving away any extra information here. Eureka might get mad at me, James. But word on the street is we have some RBLR merch up for grabs as well. If you don't get those tickets, maybe you get a consolation prize. It's worth throwing your selfie in there. Bring a new fan to the home games coming up. Tag us, like James said, at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Rowdies, either one. You have a chance to get some free merch too. So just throwing that out there.
All right. Now that we have done all of our buildup, let's get into the week that was. The week that was started normally enough. It was a Monday. Probably the Rowdies players went to training and just went there. I think probably Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere over the course of that week, it was revealed to them, not the public, that Robbie Nielsen was no longer going to be the manager of the club. So that is very interesting. It ultimately did become public on Friday. And I guess as much as this phrase gets overused, it was definitely one of those, yeah, that happened type of moments. And I think that everybody, at least in the fan community, of which I include myself, because Carlos, as everybody knows, even though our contracts stipulate multi-million dollar salaries, we only do this on volunteer work. Don't know how he wrangled that, but he has. And
yeah, I got to talk to a lawyer. I really don't know how I've been involved with this now for multiple years without getting any sort of monetary compensation, but we'll get there. James, take it back.
Yeah, but with all of that said, the fan community, I think, was pretty taken aback, and especially because it was the day before the home opener. So there was obviously so much buildup to this home opener. It was the first game at home since September. All of the players and coaches that we spoke to after the game, by the way, noted the exact day. I think it was September 19th, if I'm not mistaken. And Forrest Lasso is one of the players that we spoke to after the game. It was his first game in any capacity since May. So keep that in mind, too. He obviously tore his ACL back then, and he's been out recovering until just about now. And so there was a lot of pomp and circumstance to this game. And yeah, you would think ahead of time, just to keep continuity, that they would keep Robbie Nielsen on, even if they didn't think that he was necessarily the guy. But I guess with the games coming up that Carlos, you and I have to preview before we end this podcast, they decided that ahead of time was the best option. And I understand that that makes sense in terms of if you don't think he's the guy, you might as well get rid of him as soon as possible so that you can start your search for somebody to take over if that's the goal. I think that I texted this, and Carlos, you covered it with Eureka on Friday while I was happily doing my taxes, not so happily. And so I texted that I was hoping this was a sign that they thought that they could go and get somebody in particular that they'd had their eye on. And maybe this person had recently become available, whatever. I think that that was wishful thinking. Right now, Steve Coleman took over as a prior assistant manager, and Jan Ekra, I guess, is likely filling his spot as a former assistant manager now coming in. He was announced actually the Friday before Robbie Nielsen was let go, everything turns out. And that was the news that we had walking into Al Lang Stadium on Saturday, which, again, like I said, very good atmosphere. Everything was very nice. The amenities are really good. They changed where the team shop is, and they have real kitchens there so they can offer new things. Mozzarella sticks for anybody who's interested in that. Ooh. I don't mind mozzarella sticks. All right. Among many things, Al Lang has a lot of new stuff going on, and a new coach too. So that was the jarring way that we stepped out onto the field against Loudoun United. Carlos, I will do the lineup here, and I'll do the standings update, but then I'll turn it over to you to fill in what you need to, because I'm sure you have thoughts and feelings as well. The lineup for the Loudoun game: Nico Campisi in net, Lawrence White, Forrest Lasso, Robert Castellanos, and Aaron Guillen across the back. It was four at the back. Pacific Nyongabire, Kemi McPherson, Thomas Van Kaziel, and Ollie Bassett as the four in midfield. Ubens Passius and Manuel Arteaga were up top. Three penalties in three games now for the Rowdies. The third one coming again, I think this one was Aaron Guillen. So that's also on the left side if we're keeping track of it. Also a relatively weak call if we're going to put it that way. And Abdellatif Abukura put it away. Anybody who knows how well he's doing this year is unsurprised by that. They were up 2-0 before we were able to score very late into stoppage time, really not giving ourselves a chance to come back. Standings update, Loudoun United still lead the entire league now with 15 points alone up top. We are actually 11th overall in the Eastern Conference. As far as I'm aware, we sit behind Miami FC. I believe that is due to some deal that is not goal differential because we're better than them on goal differential, but I don't know exactly what the next tiebreaker is. So I apologize for that. Louisville City and Detroit City are both behind Loudoun United in second and third with 11 points each. Out west, Monterey Bay lead with 13 points. San Antonio and New Mexico are in second and third. Each of them have 12. Carlos, I've been talking a while. I'm sure you have thoughts, none of which have to do with Robbie Nielsen, of course. Who would think that? But yeah, let's get your opinion. You went into this a little bit on Friday, so I don't want to take up too much more time, but I'm sure there's more that you've got.
Well, I won't beat the dead horse too much here because, like you said, Eureka and I took a good hour of everyone's time on Friday, diving into it a bit. And I still stand by what I said earlier about whether this was the appropriate timing for this, given the stretch of home games we have coming up and just the circumstances around last season with the Hurricanes and everything and beginning of this year all on the road and everything. So for now, I still stand by that. And we'll see how Steve Coleman does. Obviously, wish him all the best. He's leading my favorite team. Yes. of course, I'm going to wish him all the success in the world. I don't know how much new news this is to folks, but the word and what he shared is that he's set to be the quote-unquote interim head coach through the remainder of the year. So whatever that interim title means to you, he'll be here for the remainder of the year as it stands. So this is the guy we're riding with, James. And again, we don't know much about him. That's what Eureka and I touched a bit about on Friday. We don't really know a ton about his coaching experience, but he's here and we'll see how he does. Obviously, again, all the best in the future, hopefully. So going from there, James, this game was, thank you for all the context setting there. And then, first home game back in so much time. And the TIFOs were beautiful, like you said. I love the Al Lang Will Rise situation going on from the Rouse Mob supporter section, of course. It was beautiful. I will also throw in here, by the way, before we jump into this, that Bodily, Hilton, and Moon were all out on Saturday due to injury of some nature. So not a great situation for Steve Coleman to jump into the leadership role in. Obviously down three pretty important players. Nick Moon has taken up more and more playing time as of late. We know how much talent he has, but he's just been bugged by injuries last year. Was really never really able to settle in. And hopefully this year we can see more of him. And of course, Bodily, someone we came to know very well. Hilton, of course, us rock in the midfield. So three guys that could have definitely contributed to this game. I'm not quite sure how much they would have added in this one because it was ugly. It was really ugly, James. I mean, maybe Hilton adds a nice dynamic in the midfield. We couldn't get anything going between the midfield and the attack. No. I knew, and again, I'm going to take some credit for this because I know I've said this 3 years in a row, but eventually I was going to be right that Loudoun was pretty legit. This Loudoun team looks like good though, in a way that like doesn't make any sense. None of their players are like stars or should be like scoring too many goals. But they're scoring goals, James. They have 11 goals on the year already in six games, which isn't a ton, but it leads the Eastern Conference, at least probably the league. They played really, really well, like really well. I like I said, I knew they were pretty legit coming into this game. I did not expect them to have the upper hand like they did so early on in this one. By the way, we've talked a lot about Campisi earlier on in the season. Campisi did a pretty good job of keeping us in this game in moments where Loudoun had some really good-looking opportunities. The one opportunity that Campisi was not necessarily involved in directly was one that absolutely should have been a goal for Loudoun, and I'm blanking on the player who was wide open in like the 8-yard box to put that away, but he just skied it. We got incredibly lucky there early on in the first half. Loudoun could have easily been up 1-0 before we hit even like the 30th minute mark. We started to settle into it bit later on in the first half, but I wouldn't say we were doing anything particularly threatening with the ball. We just had the ball, which was, you know, a welcome change from the early part of this one. It was ugly. There's not really many other words for it. The second half was not a ton better. Loudon still kept up the pressure. They had a lot of the ball. Let me check the numbers because I don't want to get it wrong. FotMob officially says Loudon had 49% of the ball, which I would imagine the second half, as they kind of held on to that 2-0 lead, were much more comfortable to lay off of it a bit. But that first half, James, let's see the numbers. There's a way to check this, right? First half possession, in a way I can't figure out at the moment. It's just like they controlled the game. They played the game they wanted to play. I never would expected this type of team to come out to Al Lang and like establish their game the way they did. Usually Loudon's a team that will kind of absorb the pressure. You know, we have the ball. We, in some cases, can't create anything with it. This is kind of something that happened last year when they beat us at home. We had a lot of the ball, had some chances, but Loudon scores because they, you know, have a good counterattack or something like that. This Loudon just established their game early on. I mean, they weren't even playing. I truly think it's a mix of them feeling very confident in themselves right now, obviously, because they're in first place. Also, sensing blood in the water with this Tampa Bay Rowdy squad, given, you know, the early shaky start, new coach. I think there was no reason for them to play the game that they had, but the game that they have played at Al Lang the past several seasons, which is sit back and absorb pressure. They were the better team coming into this game, and they were the better team in the game because they established themselves early on. They didn't feel a need to be scared or play cautious. They played their game, and because of that, we didn't have anything going for us. We had, what, 5 shots on target the entire game. Woops had a lovely finish at the end of the game. I'll say it's impressive that he's able to, you know, score the goals he has early on in this one, which has made me much more confident in his ability, because we're not really helping him in the midfield. Like, he's kind of doing things by himself at this point.
He did a lot by himself.
Yeah, and he's still scoring the goals, you know. So I'm looking forward to a point in this season where the chemistry is there between the midfield. We kind of know what McPherson's role is. We kind of know what the other guys are doing. And the guys kind of gel together, especially in that central part of the field. Once that happens, I mean, I think the goal scoring numbers for Woops can be pretty high this year. Again, this is looking at the stats, 0 big chances for us on 5 shots on target. Loudon had, quote unquote, 4 big chances. And it felt like it too. Like, they had great looking opportunities that could have ended up in the goal. Again, Ken PC made a few big saves. They had a penalty, which was highly questionable. And on another day, James, on another day, I'd be worked up about that call. Like, I'd be much more worked out about that call than I am right now. But like, they deserved another goal anyway. Like, we were lucky that they weren't scoring more goals. You know what I mean? I think in some ways they got a sense of justice based on the performance they had on the field. They deserved more goals than they had, and they deserved to win. So I think we got super lucky to not have conceded more than 2 goals. So for that reason, I'm not particularly upset that we got a very, very shaky penalty call against us at best. So that's a 30,000 feet review of kind of what happened here. I'm not quite sure how to feel about it because, I mean, the new coach, it's a really shaky time right now. Early on in the season, we have these 3 pretty big injuries coming into this one. The lineup was kind of strange. If you'll humor me here for a second, James, we had like, what, Nyang Gabiri, who kind of plays like the wing back role more often earlier on this year and last year. Van Kaziel's in there. He's a defensive player. You have Guillen, Castellanos, Lasso, Weick. I'm counting like 6 guys that play more like defensively than offensively, even though Nyang Gabiri is kind of like a cop, you know, there's an asterisk there because he can play in a more attacking role. He got the assist officially, but he's played in like the wing back role mostly this year and last year. So again, 5-6-ish guys here that are playing like more of a defensive role. Plus you have your central midfielders, one of which is probably in more of a defensive role as well. Like Van Kaziel, I'm not quite sure what was going on here. Van Kaziel has a pretty high like FOP mob rating. I didn't really notice him in this game. I was more surprised that he was even all like starting on the field, because I think of him as a backline guy, you know. And evidently he was not on the back line, but I wasn't quite sure where he was on the field in this one. Maybe James, you can share your insight here, because I was kind of missing it. But it was a weird lineup too, is what I'm saying. So I'm not quite sure what to make of it. I don't know. Like, we're systematically, didn't seem like we changed it up too much, but just the personnel was a little strange. Maybe it's because of the three injuries I just mentioned as well. I'm still not fully sold on McPherson. He had an early, like, good early showing at the beginning of the year and has kind of not really found his footing for me yet. I don't really know what he's like doing, if that makes sense. I'm not really sure what his role is in the central midfield right now. And it's just, so maybe it sounds more negative than I usually am, but it's more of just, I have a lot of questions and I'm not really sure where to start with them. By the way, if you're listening to this live on X, Twitter, or YouTube, please give us your thoughts as well, because I'm curious what kind of the sentiment is right now, if we're feeling still kind of optimistic after the coaching change in the Rowdies fan base, or if we're feeling like I am, with more questions than answers. James, take it away before I keep ranting. How did you see this play out? You know more tactics than I do. Where was Dan Casey on the field? I'm not quite sure like what his role was here either.
Yeah, he was sitting in front of the back four, and Cammy McPherson was in the position where he was allowed to get forward a lot more, although it wasn't the same way as we saw him against Miami. It was against Miami when he was allowed to get pretty much anywhere he wanted. That was not the case this past game. But yeah, I remember similar confusion when I saw the list of players in the starting 11. I thought, exactly how many defenders are we going to have here? Are we going to have three at the back? Is it going to be three on three and then everybody else is just allowed to get forward? But of course it didn't quite work out that way. Yeah, the 4-4-2 was interesting. Depending on which side it was on, the winger would move a little bit more inside to offer some help to the attacker, which in that case would be Arteaga or Rubens Passius, and then the fullback would be allowed to get up, and then they would slide to another kind of three at the back. So if Wyke is getting up, Pacific Nyangabire moves slightly more inside, closer to the 18-yard box, and it would be three at the back with Castellanos, Lasso, and Guillen, and then switch it for the opposite side, Bassett coming inside a little bit from the left. Now, I didn't see a ton of good play from this connection-wise, is the way that I'll phrase that. Carlos, I think that you said that there was no buildup in between the midfield and the attack, or the defense and the midfield. I forget exactly.
It was a lot of long balls that weren't going anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's something that I noticed for sure. There were a lot of long balls because I don't think that I guess the coaching staff realized that we don't have a ton of ball playing midfielders in this system. Pacific Nyangabire likes to put his head down and dribble. Not always the most effective when we get that, unfortunately. So Bassett, I think, is another player who can do that. He might not be as just straight line, put him in a sprint against somebody else, but he and Nyangabire will both try and do that and keep the ball and then work off of the attackers on the left side, passes on the right side, more Arteaga. But McPherson and Van Kaezeel are both more defensive minded. I think even when McPherson is allowed to roam, he's allowed to roam so that he can put the other team under pressure. So I didn't see him do that a ton to great effect in this one. And yeah, we didn't have a lot of buildup. We ended up resorting to a lot of these long balls, and that worked only in a couple of instances, most especially when they fell to the feet of Rubens Passius. There was an incredible, incredible little nutmeg in the second half that I brought up to him after the game. I really wish that this had actually resulted in a goal, because it was so nice. We were down one, and the ball came to Passius. He was like 10 yards into the Loudoun United half. He just pokes it through his defender's legs and gets it on the other side. He chases it down, and we did not score that one. I really wish we had. It was so nice. But he ultimately gets a goal later on. I forgot as well that he had a very nice play that led to a Pacific Nyangabire shot where Passius was coming down the left-hand side of the Rowdies' attack, was in the 18-yard box for Loudoun United, and he just got himself enough space, just enough space to whip in a cross, which was, I wouldn't say whip actually, but just put in a cross over the heads of the Loudoun defense. And Pacific Nyangabire, I don't think the goalkeeper for Loudoun knew that he was going to get anything on it. It just, his hand happened to be in a place where the ball ended up. And so he kept it from going into the net and pushed it onto his own post where the defender was there to clear it. So those were two really good chances.
Yeah. That was really pretty. That was our nicest like buildup of the game, I would say.
Absolutely.
That chance in particular was lovely. Like you said,
yeah.
I think it was more like, I won't say luck. It's probably a certain level of high quality positioning that gets you in a spot to make that save too. But it, in some sense, a bit of luck as well, because he was not ready for that, I don't think, James.
No. I think that totally comes down to positioning. But as we've said, Loudoun is a good team. These are all pretty well USL veterans, even if they're not players that I guess we think of when we think of our top players in the USL. They're all USL veterans. And Abdellatif Aboukoura has, of course, taken the next step in his career. I think that he'll be with Loudoun United for however long it takes for DC to say, okay, we could use someone like him on our wing. It's not like DC's doing very well in MLS. Yeah, anyway. Say,
which could be pretty soon.
So keep your eyes on that, I suppose. But there was not enough connection between the front to back for sure. And what Loudoun was supposed to do to change, or what we were supposed to do to get around Loudoun better, I really just don't know. With the lineup we had, I should say, obviously there are things to be done. Danny Crisostomo was on the bench, did not come off. Leo Fernandez made his first appearance in a little while, so that was very positive. But the other thing that I saw from this game, Carlos, is I think that we have a real potential lack of attacking depth. Pacific Nyangabire came back from his international duty. But Nick Moon is out, so is Pacific supposed to be a right wing back, or is he going to be a right winger? Ollie Bassett played out on the left, and then we had Leo Fernandez, but Endre Mustali was the only one who came off the bench, and you know, he brought energy for sure. But is Endre Mustali, no, this is absolutely no disrespect, I want Endre Mustali to play literally every minute that he can get. But is he the player that we need to bring on when we're down a man, or excuse me, down a goal to try and get a goal back? That's very difficult. And then, of course, and that ended up being two goals. So, in fact, the way that he was played was it was a three up top, and Endre Mustali was more the right winger with Manuel Arteaga in the middle and Wubens Passius as a left winger. So is that what Endre Mustali should be playing, quote unquote? Probably not. He's not, I don't think he's necessarily built for that. He's 17, so he's going to have energy to burn for sure. But yeah, it's just a lot of things that it's all questions and no answers at the moment. That's kind of the way that I feel after that game, because Robbie Nielsen going, we don't have the insight to say, this is why he was fired or whatever. That maybe will come out at some point in the future, but we don't have it at the moment, and we're just forced to speculate. And if that's the case, then we got Steve Coleman for the time being. He was very nice after the game, very gracious, and you know, we'll get more information from him, I'm sure, at least related to the team. But it is just questions over answers at the moment. And that's kind of how I'm seeing it. But we have also a question here from Unused Substitutes. So let's move to that now. Patience, I guess, is a big takeaway from this game. I do agree with that. You guys are on par, because what else are we going to have to go with, you know? We do need some patience here, because I don't think that there are all of the pieces that we need, at least not with the injury situation that we had. I don't think that there are all the pieces that we need to be able to fully connect the team from front to back. So patience is the name of the game in terms of being able to put them in a formation that makes this roster work. That's how I feel.
So, and this is not to get ahead of myself, and by the way, I think they're recording later today as well. So expect their stuff to come out tomorrow. We'll have some more perspectives there. Definitely give them a listen as well. Not to get ahead of myself, James, because we'll talk about the Naples game and the Louisville game later on. But like, patience is like to a certain extent as well, because I'm really scared of this game on Wednesday. Like, yes. I don't think we can afford to be in the position we're in and then lose to a third division side either. And by the way, we'll get to it in just a minute, but they look really good. They look really good too. So I'm a little concerned, because there's a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. And I'll save some more of my thoughts for that in just a second, but just to tee that up now that we're talking about patience. But generally, I think it's a good mantra for this year. Tempered expectations. But man, like, this roster is so good, James. Like, I'm hesitant to say, like, it's not going to get figured out at some point this year. I'm just not quite sure when that will be. And I hope it's soon. But like you said, a lot of questions around, you know, not just the club right now as a whole, but particularly like individuals, where they're playing on the field, what's Van Kaziel's role going to be?
Where is everyone going?
Yeah. Like, physically, where on the field, is Cammy the guy there right now? Like, I'm not sold. Like, there's nothing going for him. Bassett looked okay, to be clear. He had a really good look in this one that was a few inches away from being snuck into the near post. I'm pretty confused just generally. but I guess, like I said, I mean, Steve Coleman had what, a day, maybe 2 days tops to kind of figure out what he's going to do with these guys. So I'm not, yeah, whatever, you know, I have nothing else really. That's my confusion is the conclusion for this game. Yeah, not a penalty, but doesn't matter, because we would have lost anyway. One of those Loudon shots should have gone in. What else? Oh, here's my other thing. One more thing I wanted to mention about your attacking depth question. Should we have loaned out Christian Ortiz?
I think I had that exact same thought when the news came out. So
like, I was thinking, you know, at the time with Andrew Mustali, he seems like he's got some great quality. Like, I figured it would be fine, but I also figured we'd be in a better position than we're in.
Yes.
I figured, and again, like, I'm going to bleed into the Naples thoughts here, but I figured like we would be in a better position in the league right now, and Endry would come in and start against like a Naples, you know, get him some minutes and maybe, you know, see what he's really capable of shining in. But in the situation we're in right now, nope. I'm scared to start, you know, the rotation guys against Naples. You know what I mean? So anyway, save it for that game. That we'll talk about in just a minute. But that's an open question to the Rowdies community that we can ponder a bit as the season progresses. Is Christian, he's got at least one goal. And we should keep up more.
In the Open Cup.
Yeah, he's got at least one goal over there in Columbus Crew 2 right now. Maybe it would have been a nice piece to have just have another body there right now in the attack. But I digress. James, anything else in this game?
Let's do our man of the match, because it is, in fact, this week, the RBLR man of the match. It is Wubens Passius. Are you really that surprised? Based off of everything we've said, I don't think you should be. Both Carlos and myself, he gets two man of the match awards from RBLR. Yeah. All right. Well, with that out of the way, I want to one more time highlight our ticket competition. Bring a friend, snap a selfie, tag us in it, and you can get free tickets to the game on August 16th. That we have to give away. It is our drawing to give away. So please take part in that. And again, there might be some other stuff that come along with those tickets. Maybe RBLR, maybe something else. Who can say? Dude, and so on the other
free.
Side.
It's so free. Like, go to the game. You bring a friend anyway, probably. Take a selfie with them. Maybe try to bring a friend who's never been to a game. Take a selfie. Tag at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Rowdies. And you get free stuff, including, James, a grand prize, free tickets to that that big game in August. I think, is that Phoenix? Am I remembering right?
I will double check since I have it right here. August 16th, Saturday at home versus Phoenix, original era night.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be really cool. We talked to Ryan about that before the season. Remember, if you recall, just a couple weeks ago. Sorry, not before the season, before the home opener. We talked about, you know, all the special nights coming up with the 50th year anniversary celebrations. And he's been hyping up this one in particular. It'll be really, really cool to bring back some guys from the original era, from the 70s, 80s, 90s. A lot of folks who still live around the Tampa Bay area, and celebrate them, their achievements and their legacy in this 50th season. Yeah, take a picture, take a selfie with your friend who's ever been in a game, and tag us at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Rowdies for a chance to get free stuff, including free tickets to that game. Okay, James, let's move on. I think it's time. Let's preview this matchup on Wednesday against Naples in the Open Cup, an FC Naples team who's in their first year of existence, James, and they've got quite a good little culture going on already. And not little to be like diminutive or anything, little because it's, you know, it's a smaller city, small stadium, and they've built up something pretty cool in a smaller, much smaller community than most, you know, soccer communities. It's fascinating. They have upwards of 4,000 season ticket holders already, if I'm not mistaken, in a 5,000 person stadium. They have a great, you know, supporters culture going on over there. A lot of Hispanic influence with the Barra Brava style with the banners and rums. And I absolutely love it. Something I wish we could tap into more in the Tampa Bay community, like with all the Hispanic presence we have in our area. I think it's really, really cool what Naples have been able to do in just a few weeks of playing games. Pretty cool. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be present there on Wednesday, and I'm sure we'll have some of our folks down there as well. Get down there if you can. It'll be Wednesday night at 7 p.m. in Naples. We're playing our first matchup in the glorious U.S. Open Cup, James. First matchup of the Open Cup in 2025 for us. Naples have won 6 of their 8 games so far. They're in great form. They played a fantastic, fantastic Open Cup match, which, James, you were at, if I'm not mistaken, against Sarasota Paradise, a local-ish squad. With another little great thing going down there. They're top of the table in League One. This is not a team to mess around with. If we were implementing promotion and relegation this season, they'd be very much in the conversation to be promoted for next year.
Yep.
They line up with Lalo Delgado in net, Max Glasser, Jake Dengler, Breck Evans, and Julian Cisneros in defense. They have Chris Heckenberg at 6. Behind Ian Cerro, Kevin O'Connor, Jaden Onen, and Andres Ferdin. Number 9, Carson Henderlong is up there as well, who has 5 goals, 1 in the cup already. Ferdin has 1 goal and 1 assist this season. They have lots of height at the back, James, what you've shared in our notes here, and with plenty of quality speed on the wings. This is a matchup that's important for a variety of reasons. Oh, and by the way, this is also this is a note, by the way, that you recovered through in here as well, that we totally skipped out on. It'll be, to my knowledge, and I think I'm getting this from, I think Leo Fernandez, his wife, she posted something on Instagram that said the first ever Fernandez brother matchup.
Oh, wow. So
this will be really fun because hopefully we can see Gustavo on the field, Gustavo Fernandez, that is, for Naples, obviously, the brother of Leo Fernandez. That would be really fun for them, obviously, but fun for us too, I would say, to see the brother versus brother matchup down in Naples. Obviously, I hope Leo Fernandez's side ends up on the winning end here. But all the best to Gustavo Fernandez as well. He's had a really interesting career as well in the USL. I believe he was last at North Carolina FC, had some great runs over there, and is now at FC Naples. Quality player on the back line. I'm not sure if he's been starting recently, James. I don't believe so. But maybe we can get a matchup with him on the field as well. Okay. So like I said, this is a crucial game for a lot of reasons, if nothing else, for our sanity and for our confidence. This is not a typical lower division side.
Nope.
In fact, I think just kind of the nature of U.S. soccer has shifted as a whole to where the third division sides aren't to be taken so lightly anymore, just as a whole. But in particular, this FC Naples team looks really good. And we've gotten this from a bunch of folks who've seen their games. James, you were at their game against Sarasota Paradise. Maybe you can share some insight into what you saw on the field for them, and from their supporters off the field as well. But they look good. I've seen a few of their games on TV now. They look legit. They are coming into this one on fire. And with a lot to play for. I mean, what better way to kind of cap off their incredible start to the year, first season in existence, then beating, you know, the historic, the bigger club of the West Coast of Florida, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. I think they're going to come into this one with a lot of fire, playing at home in front of their fans. I would assume that they have a pretty great showing from their fans against the Rowdies this Wednesday. I think they're going to come out on fire. And I'm hoping we can establish our game early. But, James, again, my question is, I'm not even really sure, like, what our game is at the moment. So I'm not sure what that would even look like. I'm not as confident as I feel like I should be for this one, because this is a really solid third division side. So, James, give me your thoughts. What are you seeing in this matchup as we approach Wednesday on this Monday evening?
Yeah, we already noted the height on the back line. So if you think that those long balls to Wubens Passius are going to work this one, I think that you are you're going to be upset about how the game goes. So with that being said, Chris Heckenberg is one of the most important players on the field. He sits in front of the back line, and he is the director of their midfield from that position. He kind of is able to pick and choose where he wants to put the ball. He, Breck Evans, and Jake Dengler will all try to quarterback, quote-unquote, at times, depending on what they see in front of them. Max Glasser and Julian Cisneros, these are two players that have been very good as the fullbacks, getting up the field, and you'll see them do it pretty frequently during this game. Andres Ferin is the left winger their last couple of games, and he will try to get up higher and play on that back line. So that'll be Forrest Lasso, Robert Castellanos, we assume. He'll be playing on their shoulder, trying to beat an offside trap every so often. And he will have Jaden Onan, their first player, kind of supporting him in that role as a deeper player, but somebody who can interact with the left fullback when they get higher up the field. Like I said, Chris Heckenberg is a very good player for his position. He's going to be extremely important for us to keep in mind, not just in the attacking sense, but also when we try to attack, it's going to be beating him that is a big part of actually getting any good chances against Naples. Let's take a look off the field as well. Naples sold, like Carlos said, 4,000 season tickets. This is their first ever season. They play in a stadium of 5,000 people, roughly. I don't know the exact numbers here. Yeah. I think it's 4,000 season tickets. I think it's 5,000 people.
Yeah, so, you're right. You're right.
With that said, this is a well-supported team. I do another podcast with Carter Krishnayer that covers all of Florida. We will eventually be talking to the Naples owners, and all of my questions at this point are going to be about their marketing and how the hell they created this situation in Naples. I think, Carlos, you and I were both going into this year very skeptical of what Naples was going to be able to produce.
Oh, yeah.
I've been to Naples, and where they're playing also is east of I-75 going south. That's not like within Naples, you know? It's not what we think of as Naples. Going out there, I guess there's some number of people who are willing to do it, and there's some number of people who live closer. So, yeah, we were both very skeptical that this was going to be a well-supported project. We were both extremely wrong about that. And, you know, good for Naples, but at the same time, this is going to be bad for us. They are going to be up for it. Their players are going to be up for it. They are all USL Championship or mostly USL League One veterans. They understand the importance of the US Open Cup. They understand the importance of getting eyes on you in the Open Cup. The way that you do that is you beat a team from above you. Why does everybody who follows US soccer know who El Farolito is? It's because they beat somebody every year who's better than them on paper. Quote,
and they have a stick name.
And they have a stick name. You're right. Name. That's true. Yeah. I shouldn't discount that, because FC Naples is not the best name. So we'll see how they work on the cup set side of things. Yeah. But yeah, this is going to be a very tough game. They are well organized. They know all of their positions, and they know exactly how they want to play. Unless there's some type of injury between now and Wednesday, literally Monday night, Wednesday night, then we are going to be facing a very good team that is very well drilled. It's a well-oiled machine, you might say.
Absolutely.
This is going to be it's extremely important for us, though, because this is a year, every year is a year, but we want to get silverware. We still have the opportunity, because MLS is being the dickheads they are, and they are only putting several of their two teams, their reserve teams in. And then eventually some more MLS teams will join. But we're not there yet. So we have a good opportunity right now to stamp ourselves as a team to beat in the Open Cup and get farther along. Just yeah. because we're joining when we are, we'll already be closer to later rounds, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, whatever. Let's please go out and get a good result in this game. But it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Carlos, do you want to do predictions now or do you want to do predictions after we do the second preview?
No, we should definitely just we'll give our predictions for this game. And then we'll
all right.
Well, but I will say that I am significantly more scared about this game than I am about the game against Louisville.
Yes.
And for
it's one and done.
Yeah, and I think it's for obvious reasons as well, because against Louisville, I think at this point we're kind of playing with house money given how the season has gone, and given where we are with the coaching situation. Obviously, a win against Louisville would kind of, you know, maybe help turn things around. But this game against Naples, James, like you said, it's one and done. If anyone recalls that Sacramento Republic run all the way to the final in the Open Cup, Sacramento was like, what, an eighth, ninth place? I think they were like an eighth place squad that season in the West. Like, they weren't anywhere like super high. They weren't playing their best soccer, but they were playing their best soccer in the Open Cup. Honestly, if it comes to it and we want to be an eighth place team this season, I hope it at least comes with a like an Open Cup final run like Sacramento's. But more importantly, I think a loss to Naples, it wouldn't be like shambolic or like as embarrassing as it might have been for other teams because of where we are and because of how good Naples is, but it's still a third division side, you know. And on paper, even though we're where we are, we should still be going there and beating this team. I think we can. So my official prediction is going to be 2-1. And it's a little, I don't even know if it's bold. That's my official prediction. And again, I'm more scared about this game than I am against Louisville. Cause like you said, it's one and done. If we lose, I think it'll be a bit of a headline. It just,
oh, yeah.
it won't be good. Yeah. It won't be good for confidence at all. Because this is a lower division side, because we are where we are. That being said, if we win, it should still be expected, right? But if we go down there and win, we play a good game, we score some more goals, a win right now in any competition is good for momentum, for self-confidence, for belief in the boys and their own belief in themselves. I think right now, sometimes that's the hardest thing, is believing in your own squad's ability. Forrest Lasso put out a lovely little tweet after the game, some along the lines of, you know, thank you everyone for your support. We promise like we're doing is not good enough right now, but we're going to come back stronger. A game in Naples against the lower division side, I think provides a good platform to build on, to start building something and go into the Louisville game with some fire, and some momentum. That being said, a loss, and I think you're in a really dark place, like not to be dramatic, but I think you kind of put yourself in a pretty dark situation early on in the year with a new coach. Playing against one of the best teams in the league on Saturday after a loss on Wednesday would be tough.
Yes.
So it's a much more important game than I think a lot of us realize this early on in the year.
Yep. So Carlos, yours is a 2-1 win. Eureka has joined you as a 1-0 win. I went with a 2-2 draw, which means we go to extra time and penalties, where I have chosen us to move on. So I am going with a win, but with a technical draw. So I guess that it's a little bit more of a bummer pick, but still moving on.
It's still a win. Yeah. And you know what? Again, this is not a team to be pushed over. Like a penalty advance is still good. It's still good. And two goals too. We score two goals. Shit, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I guess that's fair to point out. Yeah. All right. Well, let's do our second preview. This is coming up against Louisville City. So this Saturday at 7:30, once more at Al Lang, we play Louisville City.
Yep.
They have also got an Open Cup game this week. It will be played on Tuesday in Louisville versus Loudoun United. Loudoun that we just played, by the way. So a lot of travel actually for Loudoun United. That's unfortunate for them, but I guess it's closer to get to Louisville than to Florida.
Yeah.
Regardless. Loudoun have currently, not after the Open Cup game, but currently played five games, two draws so far, and the rest were wins. Last week, they went to Sacramento and secured a 1-1 draw away from home. Away from home in Sacramento, that's pretty good. Yeah, really can't complain about that.
The last minute lovely equalizer was chaotic. Definitely check that out on Twitter. It was a pretty exciting game to watch.
There you go. Something more to look forward to if you are on the social medias. In net, they have Damian Loss. In defense, they usually go with a 3-4-3, by the way. In defense, they have Sean Toch, Arturo Ordóñez, and Kyle Adams. Their midfield has frequently been Aiden McFadden, Zach Duncan, Taylor Davila, and Amadou Dia. Up top recently have been Jansen Wilson, Phil Goodrum, and Ray Serrano. Please keep in mind, just because there is a lot of fixture congestion here, they played this past weekend. They will play tomorrow night on Tuesday, if you're listening when the podcast comes out tonight on Tuesday. And then they obviously have the game on Saturday. So there might be a little bit of switching around. Possibly we'll see Manny Perez playing in certain places. Possibly we'll see Adrian Perez playing in certain places. Just have to keep an open mind, I suppose. Sean Toch, by the way, current USL appearance leader for the entire history of the league. This just happened, I think, within the last month, but he has taken over as the USL appearance leader. Good enough, Sean Toch. Well done. If I'm not mistaken, he was born in like one of the Dakotas. So very weird that somebody from that background has done that. I hope I'm not mixing him up, because now I would sound like a dummy. But yeah, either way, good for him for the USL appearance leader. Ray Serrano has 3 goals on the year. Zach Duncan has 2 assists. Manny Perez and Jansen Wilson are the 2 top chance creators. Remember, I said Manny Perez could also work his way into the starting lineup. They will obviously be doing more travel this week, because even though they play at home, they will go. They were just in Sacramento. They will stay at home to play Loudoun, and then they will have to come down here to play us. So hopefully their legs will be at least a little bit wobbly when they come up against us down in Florida. Let's get into the predictions then. Carlos, is there anything that I left off that you want to throw in there about Louisville City?
They're pretty good at soccer.
That's true.
And it's kind of annoying. By the way, he is actually from North Dakota. You were right. I was hoping you were wrong so I could make fun of you, but you were right. It's a good pull. Just a kid from North Dakota. 229 appearances for Louisville. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's rare that you see that much continuity at this level of soccer in the U.S. Yeah, he's been there since 2017. Impressive. Fun fact, he actually also played in he played for the Milwaukee Wave in the Major Arena Soccer League at some point in his career as well. I did not know that. Good for him. Yeah. I hope he lets in like 6 goals on Saturday.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you my prediction, operating under the assumption that we win on Wednesday. Because I think that wave of momentum, or negative, whatever the opposite of momentum is. Is there like a negative momentum?
Dismomentum, yeah.
like backwards momentum, I guess. I don't know. I think that actually will play into how we look on Saturday. But it's also going to be so fascinating to see how we rotate guys. Because the lineup on Saturday was weird. And we're operating without 3 pretty key players in Hilton, Moon, and Bodily. We get to Wednesday, assuming they're still going to be out on Wednesday, or maybe they're not. Maybe they come back on like for Saturday. Like, there's a lot of question marks around the lineup. And I think that's making me go back and forth on this prediction as well. I think if we go out there on Wednesday and win against Naples and score a couple goals, let's say my 2-1 prediction is right, we can go into Louisville and go down to St. Pete, beautiful alley on the water, and get a 1-1 draw. What is it? I don't know. I want to say a win. I really do want to say a win. I just think with like the squad rotation, the bit of lack of depth we have in the attack right now, I don't know how we're going to rotate guys effectively to play a good full 90 against 2 good teams this week. I don't know how we're going to do it. Yeah. Truly. I think we can play a good game against both of these teams. I just don't know if we get 2 wins on the week. I think if we lose on Wednesday against Naples, we will also lose on Saturday, though.
I can see it.
I will say that. That's kind of why I caveat what I'm saying by saying that the Wednesday results can have an effect on Saturday. I think if we win on Wednesday, we could definitely win this game on Saturday. against Louisville. We'll have some good momentum. But again, the only reason I'm throwing a draw in there is because, well, obviously Louisville's a great squad, but the depth question leaves a big gray area for me that I'm not quite sure how it'll shape up yet. I think it could be a really good week for us. It could be a really good week. But if we don't go into that game on Wednesday with some serious, you know, like fire under our butts, we have the potential to have a really ugly week too. So I'm hoping it's the other way around. I think it could be a turning point for us this season. If we come into this week and play our butts off and have an incredible, incredible two-game stretch, I could see us getting the win on Saturday. But for now, officially, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. And by the way, this is the first game of the season I'll be at. So I'm really, really excited to be at Al Lang. Check out all the new amenities. If you're around, say hi. I'll be around the stadium early because James, it's been so long since I've been at Al Lang. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take in the sights and sounds early. I'm going to take advantage of this Mick Ultra like fan zone early on. I saw $3 beers before the game.
Can't argue with that, can you?
Yeah, so I would say I'd be at one of the bars around the stadium early on, but that's where I'm going to be. So come hang out and we'll chat and catch up and talk about how great the game on Wednesday was when we inevitably win 6-7-0.
There we go. Yeah.
James, that's a long-winded way of giving you my prediction. That's officially a draw, but I think and hoping, and honestly, I do think it could be a win. What's your prediction?
I went with a 2-2 draw yet again. This one will not go to penalties as a league game. It will just finish a 2-2 draw. And Eureka has joined us as a 2-0 loss in this one. Possibly the smart choice, but we're not going with smart here. We're still part of RBLR Rowdy's hype, even if we're not as hyped this week because our questions over answers kind of deal, but blah, 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 blah. We'll leave that behind.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Screw you, James. We're going to win the Open Cup. We're going to win the Jägermeister Cup.
There we go.
And look, it's only, what, 4 or 5 games in? I don't care. We can win now and win the rest of the games. Believe in Steve. That's what we're going to do for the rest of the year.
All I want from Steve Coleman, like I think this goes right back to what you said, Carlos, there's a lot riding on Wednesday. If we can get a good game on a Wednesday, we can get a good game on a Saturday. He needs to make sure that this team is dialed the bleep in for these two games. Starting on Wednesday, from minute 0 to minute 90 to minute 120, if it gets to be that way, they have to be dialed in. And that's what I want from Steve Coleman in this game. I want him to be that guy.
Yeah, yell at them a little bit. We need a little intensity. We need some people angry out there. Honestly, like I didn't see enough people like pissed off on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what I loved about, you know, Arteaga last season is his antics and getting really upset like the smallest thing. So he's a competitor. You know, I saw him getting more like throwing his hands up.
Exactly. Whatever. I don't want that.
I want people being angry on Wednesday. Going into Naples and being knowing that you're the higher division team, knowing you get paid more than these bums, go in there and make sure that you earn that money. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like it's going to be a really big game for us on Wednesday. Like I said, I think it has the potential to be a really great week for us, and hopefully the start of something really, really special, and a great storyline about Steve Coleman turning the Rowdies around in 1 week, when they inevitably won the USL championship in his first year. In addition to the Open Cup and the Jägermeister Cup and, you know, the whole nine yard. James, I think that's where we can leave it for the game previews. Come out with some intensity, with some fire, with some anger. And I think we could get some good results here. Even Nate Worth, by the way, when Nate Worth's come in recently, like he looks pretty pissed off too. Like, and he's a kid, you know what I mean? This kid looks like he's coming in, like leading the field with intensity. The guy looks like, you know, he's a kid, he's 18, right? Maybe we see more of him with the rotations and everything. He's a lot of quality there. I think we could see some more of him as well. So I'll stop rambling. It's time to go out there, get some wins, James. Anything to talk about in extra time? Any other things in the wider world of soccer, in the wider Tampa Bay sports area?
There's all sorts of stuff going on, but I didn't have it here. The Sun did get a good win this past weekend, so listen to our Sun special, our Sun show, I should say. But yeah, Carlos, I think at this point, unless you got anything else, we are good to thank the listeners.
It's always a good time to thank the listeners, James. Thank you guys for listening. Everyone listening on Twitter, if that's your preferred spot to check out the lives, or if you're on YouTube, which I know it's harder to get folks over there, but you could check out James and I's lovely faces and higher quality. Throw in some questions, your comments. I love hearing everybody giving their thoughts on how things are going, whether that's Twitter or YouTube or wherever we are. You'll find our podcasts on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. And you can find James and I on social media at CarlosTPA10 for me on the X world. I don't know what I've been tweeting about. Rowdy's Ecuador elections were yesterday. I said something about that. That was chaotic. Liga had a stinker of a game today and lost me $15 on Hard Rock Sports Bet app. What else? By the way, that's a rule. Never gamble on your own teams. It's just a terrible idea. And I knew that. I broke my own rule today. And I lost again. I think I've done it like 3 or 4 times between the Rowdies and Liga, and it's always been a loss for all 4.
Carlos, I got one bet that you can always place, and that is Pedro Santos, the Loudoun United flopper who won the penalty against us. If you can bet on him to dive, do it, because that will always happen. Yeah. I have hated that guy ever since I saw him when he signed for Columbus Crew originally. He is
a strong word, James. Hate's a strong word.
It's how I feel. He is a moaning, whining word that I won't use here. And he loves to go to ground and he loves to bitch at the referee. So, Pedro Santos sucks. I hate him. And you get that here. I have kept that off of Twitter, but usually I suppose that is a good Twitter thought, right?
There you go. Yeah, get uncensored James on the podcast every week, but get more censored James. James, where do they find you?
I am at RBLR James K, mostly on Twitter at this point. And like everyone has said, please like and subscribe to our podcast. You can get the full experience everywhere. But mostly on YouTube. And if you would like to listen to us, we're on the podcast. So everywhere that you are, we are too. Please join us in all of those places. We will see you soon, hopefully after 2 Rowdies wins in quick succession for those 2 wins. And Steve Coleman, his coming out party as the greatest coach. Come on, you Rowdies.
I believe in Steve, James. I do.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.